This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. She went from being a big city girl wearing black pumps to work to a cowgirl mom married to her own Marlboro man to a national sensation with a best-selling cookbook and a personal story that resonates with millions. I'm talking about our guest this hour, Ree Drummond, blogger, photographer, wife, mother, and more. And her new cookbook, Pioneer Woman Cooks, Recipes from an Accidental Country Girl, is a big success. And the book about her life, Black Heels to Tractor Wheels, has been optioned as a movie. And she joins us in our Spirit Square studio. Ree Drummond, welcome to Charlotte.
Good morning. Thank you.
I got to tell you, I was telling you this just before we started. The last time I got the kind of reaction I got when people began to find out that you were going to be on this program was when I had Martha Stewart.
Well, so you're in good company, I guess. I've been called Mabel Stewart at times. So I'm like her hick of a cousin or something.
Your worldwide, your popularity and your trek to world dominance began with the blog, correct?
It did.
And you just sat down one day and thought, well, I've got, all the kids are out of the house with their father. I can do the laundry. I can cook something. Or I can start this blog. I think I'll start a blog.
That's exactly right. It was fate, I think, because I really had only read one blog in my life. And I really didn't know anything about it or how they worked, and it was like a gravitational pull over to the computer. And
can you explain that? Because you're successful at it. You have literally millions of people who come to your blog every day to read it, so there's a reason to write it. But when you started, nobody was going to go see it, right?
Right. My mother was my only reader, and the only reader I ever thought I'd have. I certainly didn't know that blogs had such an interactive quality. So I just thought, this is a way for me to keep in touch with my mom and put some pictures up there. And then I just sort of started using it as a journal and writing down, you know, the stories that I would whip out at parties, that, you know, embarrassing stories from my past and, you know, funny.
Why? Why was that the place to do it as opposed to a diary or just keep it to yourself or make it, let these stories come out in phone calls to friends and girlfriends and moms, etc.?
I can't explain it. I really think, you know, there must be something about this new digital way to record your memories and thoughts. And there's just something about writing it and clicking publish and having it be sort of semi-permanent. But what happened to me was, you know, a few days in, I had just posted photos and stories. And then lo and behold, I noticed that I had a comment. And it wasn't from my mother. And I thought, who is this person? Do they know me? And I was trying to decipher the name and if I went to college with them or something. But it turned out it was just a reader. And then,
how did they find you? How does anybody find anybody?
I have no idea. That's a really good question. They just sort of stumbled upon it somehow. And I also was a member of a homeschooling message board. Uh-huh. And I think someone there got wind of it. And she started telling her friends. And
so it's viral. What happened to you was viral, literally. One person told another person, and now you have 20 million hits a week or a day or something like
that? A month.
A month. It's still
not as big as you thought.
Well, 20 million, oh, gee. 20 million a month is a lot. Does it surprise you? Do you understand the phenomenon?
It surprises me because I'm no more interesting or special than the next person. I think somehow I've just sort of found a way to humor people, to sort of make them laugh and feel light for a few minutes a day. Not light, literally, because of the amount of butter I use, but light in a figurative sense. But in a way, I get it because I don't debate politics on my site. You know, you're not going to come to my site to, you know, debate the issues or hear my political commentary. So people know that it's sort of a safe place on the internet, of which there are few. You know, where they can just sort of read a story about a weird basset hound or... Yeah.
Are your readers, or do you know, are your readers fundamentally big city people, or are they country people? Are they the flyover people in the middle? Who are they?
Well, who are these people? You know, I would have thought for some time that they were all rural people, you know, from rural communities. But once I dug in and found out more about them, I found that most of the people are from suburban areas or cities. Of course, I do have people who grew up in the country who are sort of using my site to reminisce, and I hear from them. And, you know, I used to work cattle with my dad and put hay out with my with my dad, but most people just enjoy seeing this slice of America that mm-hmm. they wouldn't have otherwise seen. So, and then there are the chaps, you know, those help a lot. And
I'm going to talk about that.
Did I bring that up prematurely? Sorry.
That's all right. You do whatever you want.
But really, it's a, and I also would have thought that my readership was concentrated in the middle of the country, but as it turns out, it's a broad representation from all 50 states and countries that some of which I've never heard of. So
really, but let's backtrack and tell your story. I alluded to it a little bit when I introduced you. Reed Drummond is our guest, and she writes a blog at thepioneerwoman.com, which is more. It's become much more than just a blog. It's an entire website with cooking tips and. I went to it yesterday, and I'm trying to think what else is on there. 1,000 things. There are like 10 tabs across the top.
I have photography tutorials and home and garden discussions.
You're making money off this too, aren't you? You're in collusion with Photoshop, aren't you?
I'm not.
Oh, you're not.
I do not. Land O'Lakes Butter is not a sponsor.
Really?
And neither is Photoshop. So no, I just share the things I love.
You are missing the boat. You could be making money here.
I'm an anti-capitalist, I guess. So.
So let's tell your story. Let's back up. You were actually born in Oklahoma.
Yes.
Now, were you raised in Oklahoma?
I was. I was raised in Bartlesville, Oklahoma.
Where is that?
That's in northeastern Oklahoma. It's the home of Phillips Petroleum Company. So
okay.
It was a nice-sized corporate town. My dad was an orthopedic surgeon, and I like to say I grew up on the 7th Fairway. So... You know,
so you lived on a golf course.
Yeah, lived on a golf course. I'd just tootle across the 7th Fairway to the pool in the summer. And you know,
you were a suburban kid. You were
I was
a cowgirl.
Oh, gosh, no. I was about as suburban as they come. And but still, that community was too small in my view. So when I hit college, I decided to go west and went to Los Angeles.
To go to school?
Went to USC.
Okay.
And
I almost said UCLA. I'm sorry.
Oh, we would have had a real problem. That's a four-letter word.
Yes, it is. So you went to USC.
Went to USC and just dove right into Los Angeles and loved it.
Really?
Just soaked it up and really didn't think I'd leave. And I worked after college for a couple years. And it came to a point, I had one of those college relationships that I sort of had to reevaluate. And I wound up deciding to move to Chicago. I had some family and friends there. It was still a big, exciting city, but more kind of in the Midwest.
Right. And cold.
And I like the cold.
Okay.
So I was okay with that. But then I decided to take a brief pit stop in my hometown in Oklahoma just to kind of clear the cobwebs and get ready to move. So that's when I met him.
Him is the cowboy. and you call him in the book and in your blog, the Marlboro Man.
Right.
Why? Is it because he doesn't look exactly like the Marlboro Man. It was just because he's a cowboy, wears a cowboy hat, and he has jeans and chaps and horses and cows. Is that why?
Yeah, it's the
Does
image.
He smoke,
he
by the
he
way?
Has never smoked in his life.
Thank God.
He's never used he's never used a tobacco product. I was saying earlier, his only vice is Dr. Pepper. So... But it was more...
Can he taste all 27 flavors in the... I'm just curious.
Let's call him and ask him. No.
We can do that.
No, we'd hear a lot of cows in the background. It would be distracting.
But... Has your husband ever stepped forward? Has he ever been on television or radio with you or contributed to your blog? I know he's featured pictorially in your blog and in your cookbook.
He is a silent partner.
We should call him. What's he doing right now?
I forgot his number.
How convenient.
I don't know if I can remember. Honestly, the cows are deafening. We wouldn't be able to hear anything. So.
You describe him as, and I quote, tall, strong, and quiet. This is how you first saw him. Tall, strong, and quiet, sipping bottled beer and wearing jeans, and most notably, cowboy boots.
Yeah, it was just the typical, I just innocently went down to the local bar with some childhood friends. It was Christmas time, and we decided to have a little drink, and saw him across a smoky room, across a smoky bar, and the smoke parted, and something. This is, by the way, this is exactly how my husband would describe the moment, too, I'm sure, but...
Okay.
So we just struck up a conversation and wound up talking into the night for an hour or two. And he abruptly left. And I thought, oh, man, what happened? And I didn't hear from him for 4 months. So he was obviously just as smitten with me as I was with him.
Reed Drummond is our guest. The Pioneer Woman Cooks is the name of her very successful cookbook. And we're going to talk more about this phenomenon that is Reed Drummond as we go through the morning here on WFAE. So was it love at first sight? Would you call it love at first sight?
I mean, in hindsight, yes, I would.
On both sides.
Yes, I mean, he was unlike anyone I had ever met. I had dated a lot of golfers, you know, growing up, and Izod wearing little prepsters.
But you grew up in Oklahoma, so surely you saw a cowboy or two in your childhood and your growing up years. They weren't just exiled to the prairie.
I think they were, because our town, as I said, was a corporate town, so there was a lot of influence from other cities, and it was very insulated from the ranching agricultural culture of Oklahoma. So, you know, of course there were some guys at my high school who drove pickups, and you know, we just didn't cross paths. I was sort of more into the dangerous little punk rockers.
I want you to explain to me, I was going to save this for later, but a friend of mine yesterday, when I was explaining who you were, said, I get it. I get the cowboy thing, man. I get it, she said. And I said, what do you mean you get it? She said, I get the jeans. I get the chaps. I get the boots. I get it.
I get it, too.
Yeah. Okay, so you tell me what it is. What is it about jeans and chaps and boots and cowboy hats? What is that all about?
You mean, why do they make women swoon?
Yeah.
Maybe you should get a pair and kind of just go shopping.
A pair of cowboy boots, because back in the 70s, when Urban Cowboy was a movie,
Everybody
had to have cowboy boots. So I went and bought a pair of cowboy boots. They are the most uncomfortable pair of shoes I have ever put on my feet.
Well, you're supposed to work in them, and then you break them in. So if they're uncomfortable, it means they're not real, and you're not a real cowboy.
Oh, I'm not. You could probably tell that. But she said, this friend of mine said, you know, here's the deal. Cowboys are independent. They don't need to be told to do anything. They do it on their own. They can spend time alone and be perfectly happy. They're not needy.
Oh, that's a really great summary of a cowboy. And I think the quiet, it's not a naivete. It's more just sort of they're apart from the world in a way. So it's sort of more of a stripped down, figuratively, canvas that you're getting. But that's what struck me about my husband when I met him, was just this kind of quiet, smoldering.
You call him rugged and virile.
Rugged and virile.
Mm-hmm.
We have four children.
And is that what?
Sorry.
And is that what your readers? Is that part of the allure for readers who may not live near a cowboy?
I think so, and I think, you know, I don't think it would be as fun or as authentic if my husband was doing radio interviews or writing for my blog. He really is just the eye candy and the chaps model. So, and it's so funny. I often kind of ask myself if I should be blogging or not, but my husband's cooperation is a great indication of that.
We have to take a break. We're coming right back with Reed Drummond. We're going to talk about her cookbook and many other things here in just a moment. Charlotte Talks on WFAE.
Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Novant Health Cancer Care, offering multidisciplinary clinics where breast, prostate, GI, and lung cancer patients receive a comprehensive second opinion from a team of experts. Details at 704-384-5373. Well, tonight, we hope you'll join us for a special recording of Charlotte Talks at Theater Charlotte. We'll be talking with community theater leaders from around the region about the history and influence and contribution of community theater to our culture. We also want to hear your thoughts on it and hope you'll join us tonight. The conversation is at 7 o'clock at Theater Charlotte on Queens Road. If you'd like to join us, get the details at WFAE.org. And if you missed tonight's event, you can hear it tomorrow morning at 9 right here on WFAE.
Thank you. On the next Diane Rehm Show, protests continue in several cities over the killing of unarmed African Americans by white police officers. Amid charges of racism, new efforts to assess and revamp police procedures.
That's the Diane Rehm Show this morning from 10 to noon after Charlotte Talks on 90.7 WFAE, Charlotte's NPR news source.
I want to touch the earth. I want to break it in my hands. I want to grow something wild and unruly. I want to sleep on the hard ground in the comfort of your arms, on a pillow of blue bonnet, in a blanket made of stars. Oh, it sounds good to me. I said, cowboy, take me away. Fly this thrill as high as you can into the wild blue. Set me free, oh, I pray. Closer to heaven above and closer.
Little Dixie Chicks here this morning with Ree Drummond. The Pioneer Woman Cooks is the name of her book, a New York Times bestseller, but it all grew out of her ThePioneerWoman.com blog, on which she spends a lot of time talking about things other than food, including her cowboy husband, whose name, by the way, is Lad Drummond. If you sat down to write a novel about a cowboy, you could not come up with a better name for a cowboy than Lad Drummond. What a great name.
Ooh, I'll tell him you said it. Yeah, and we did not change it for all of this. That is his actual name. So,
We were talking before the break about how independent and stoic and solitary they can be. Why is that appealing?
You know, I think all women are drawn to different kinds of men, but I think one common trait that we look for is strength, mm-hmm. you know, and with a cowboy, there's internal strength. Mm-hmm. There's certainly external strength because they have to be able to wrestle a steer to the ground or, you know, wrestle children if that's the case. But so I think that the strength comes through in so many different ways.
You know, you didn't grow up around this, as we've already said. You were a suburban girl who moved to L.A. for college, stayed there with all the intent to stay there forever and never go back to Oklahoma. And so you are really what you say you are, an accidental country girl. How long did it take? And this is probably also part of the appeal of your blog and your book. How long did it take you to acclimate to this completely different lifestyle? You talk about eating sushi in L.A. Well, they don't eat sushi on the ranch, I'm sure.
No, it's called bait on the ranch. So there is no sushi. There's no takeout Thai food. And, you know, I was a vegetarian when I lived in California. So,
and you're on a cattle ranch now. I would think you eat a lot of steak.
You know, I was a vegetarian when I met my husband, in fact. And so that lasted about a month. He made me my first steak in 8 years. And I took one bite. It was soaked in sizzling butter, and I knew then it was all over for me. So I've been eating meat ever since.
Uh-huh.
But you asked, you know, I'm still acclimating in some ways. You know, there are days when I wake up and I still think, what am I doing here? You know, I still don't know how to saddle a horse.
Really?
That's, yeah.
Why not?
Well, because I had four kids and now they can do it. So we just passed it on, skipped me and passed it to them. But, you know, it really took me a good 5 to 7 years to really get used to the isolation and mm-hmm. the quiet, you know, because there's just no ambient noise from the traffic or cars.
But you love it.
I love it, yeah.
And you don't mind. I've read something, whether it's on your blog or whether it's in your book, I don't remember where I read this, but that you were talking to somebody on the phone and they were saying how wonderful your life is. And you said, well, right now I have a calf in my backyard with intestinal distress. You want to come trade places?
Exactly.
Something like that. And you talk about having to clean up the manure off of jeans and boots, and you got horse manure on your front porch, and That doesn't sound attractive to me.
Well, I know. I'm very careful to balance the romanticizing, which, living in the country is romantic. Mm-hmm. It's so many things that they say about the country are true. Mm-hmm. But I also balance that with the reality. And we had a sick cow who thought she was a dog and lived in our yard. And she decided she was going to live on our porch. And, sick cow plus porch... It's not a good combination.
Good, no.
So, there were days when I would see my mother-in-law driving down the road to come to our house, and I'd think, no, and where's my power washer? And so it's a very dirty job.
You were on The View. I didn't see you on The View, but I went to The View, and on their website, they have these little pre-interviews that the producer does with guests sitting in the makeup chair, and there you are being interviewed. By the way, he did a better job of interviewing you than most of the women on The View did.
He was engaged, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was. He was into it. But he also spoke to, I guess it was one of the backstage people there, who was a woman, who reads your blog. And she reads it faithfully, evidently. And she was just enamored of your life. Now, here's a person who lives in New York City or suburban New York, who has a life completely different from yours. Is that part of it that people really are curious about this pioneer lifestyle that has pretty much disappeared, at least on the coasts of America? They just don't get it. They thought it was only in the movies, and here you are living it.
I think that's a big part of it, is that it is disappearing, and family ranches, and our ranch is a family ranch.
Your husband's family has been in the business for years.
Exactly. He's a fourth generation rancher. So mm-hmm. he and his dad and his brother have managed to kind of keep things together, at a time when families are, selling to larger conglomerates, mm-hmm. and the family ranch really is a disappearing breed.
Right.
So, and the cowboy is too. So I think people do have a sense of that. It's just so countercultural and so... counter to what we see on TV and reality shows and on the news. It's just a slice of life.
When we made the announcement yesterday that you'd be a guest on this program, we almost got immediate reaction from people wanting to ask questions of you, and they've sent some Facebook and email comments, and I'm going to share a few of them with you. Eric writes on Facebook, "My wife got me into this blog," meaning your blog. "She's really cool," he says.
That was a man?
Yeah.
A boy. Well, I always admire the brave men who, will admit to reading my site, because there are a lot of women there. So
mm-hmm. Well, maybe
that's
why he's
a brave, confident man.
Sheila writes, "Ree, with all of the craziness of being a rancher's wife, mother to four punks," those are that's what you call them, by the way.
I call them my punks.
Uh-huh. "Cookbook extraordinariness, blogging, photographing queen. When and how do you get a moment to yourself? Do you ever just want to step off the merry-go-round for a while, or are you content?"
I'm very content. It helps that I'm not a type A personality. So I really wake up in the morning with absolutely no plan, no structure.
Really?
I think
no to-do list, nothing?
No. I mean, I have general to-do mm-hmm. items in my mind.
I would think laundry's on the list every day.
Yes.
Yeah.
I was in a really good mood until you said laundry. Now, I just think about what's waiting for me back home. But I think I have four children, and anyone with four children has already long since surrendered to the chaos. And,
right.
All of this... the publicity surrounding the cookbook is certainly not, my typical day or my typical schedule, but it's temporary, and I'll be back home at the ranch.
And Sheila also wants to know, what does MM think of all of this? MM is?
Marlboro Man, my husband.
Of course.
That's a question I get asked a lot, and I was saying earlier, I married this cowboy who grew up 25 miles from the nearest small town with two brothers and, worked. His father probably violated all sorts of child labor laws, when he was growing up. But for some reason, he just gets this new digital medium of blogging. He has always been completely supportive. I think he likes that I'm representing agriculture. I think he sort of looks at that angle and, appreciates it. And another question I'm asked is, have you ever written anything that has bothered your husband. Does it bother him when you post photos of his chaps or his Wranglers, which I do quite often?
Or his butt.
Well, thank you. I didn't know if I could say NPR station. But I always answer, he has never once objected to any of that. The only time he's ever had a problem is when I've gotten an agricultural fact wrong. And he tosses and turns for days. He just can't live with it. He'll say, God, why did you say it? That's not right. And I'm like, honey, we've got to move on from this. You know, I called a cow a steer or vice versa. So,
well, I was going to ask you how communicative he was, because cowboys are, they have the ability to be solitary, to be out there on the range, at least, you know, for weeks and days at a time, just themselves and their horse and the cows. Does he talk a lot? Does he communicate a lot? Is he easy to talk to? Do you have to pull it out of him, or does he volunteer it?
Well, around other people, he's very shy, mm-hmm. and quiet, and he's content to sort of sit back and watch a room full of people interact. But of course, at home, we talk all the time. He's my best friend. I mean, he's my only friend within 25 miles.
Your only adult friend.
Right, exactly. So,
Amy would love to hear about dealing with controversy on your blog comments, including the recent kerfuffle over homeschooling and religion. You homeschool.
Mm-hmm.
By choice.
Yes.
Or is it because you live 25 miles from the nearest small town?
Yes, it is. It really started out that way.
Okay.
My oldest had just finished her first year of kindergarten, and she had a great experience. I had no complaints about the school or the teachers, but we just kind of were always enslaved to the school schedule, mm-hmm. and driving 25 miles there and back several times a day. So we started looking into homeschooling and educating ourselves about it, and, you know, it just clicked for our family. I'm mm-hmm. very careful not to be a proponent of homeschooling, because I certainly don't think it's for everyone. It's kind of a radical lifestyle in terms of, you know,
and it requires a real commitment.
Yeah, it does. And, you know, you're kind of always wondering if you're messing up your kids.
Right.
So
what was the kerfuffle on the website about homeschooling and religion?
Oh, I can't really put my finger on what it was. It was just a discussion about, I think anytime religion is brought up on the internet, there's going to be a little bit of,
anywhere.
You know, controversy.
You bring it up anywhere.
And in that respect, I'm so lucky, because my site is generally extremely controversy-free. But anytime you're an internet presence of any size, the fact is you're just going to encounter negative comments.
Do you like that part of it? Because that's something that comes with the territory of being in broadcasting, certainly, and being an author who makes the rounds, etc. But a lot of people don't bargain for that. They do what they do because they love what they do. And then all of a sudden they realize other people are becoming enamored of this, or having feel that they have a voice in this, or they feel that they know you because they read you every day. They don't know you. And did that come as a shock or a surprise, or does it bother you, or do you enjoy it?
Oh, gosh, it doesn't bother me at all. I mean, I honestly, when I go to my book signings, I really feel like I'm meeting a bunch of friends that I've sort of known over the internet through the years. They're my internet friends.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that sounds funny, but I've blogged daily for 4 years. I don't share absolutely every thought in my mind, but I don't share every thought with my sister either. You know, I have some things that are just mine. But so to say that they really don't know me isn't right, because they know a lot about me and how my mind works and what I stand for. But it doesn't bother me at all.
So Vanessa on Facebook asks how you balance the demands of a public life as an internet guru, followed by thousands, actually it's millions, of visitors every day, and her private life on the ranch as a homeschooling mama. This is kind of a tie into Amy's question, I guess, or Sheila's question. How do you balance? You have a lot to do. I mean, it seems to me that to do the kind of blog and website that you maintain is not something you spend 20 minutes on every day. It's something you really have to think about. And you've done several redesigns of your site over the years, and
mm-hmm.
it's very attractive. It looks like a high-dollar, glossy, well-done website. Take some effort.
Thank you. I'm getting ready to redesign it again. Please keep me in your thoughts and prayers over the next 3 weeks. But, you know, it's so funny. I have been really busy lately with publicity surrounding my cookbook. I have looked at it as more of a chance to kind of tour around and meet the people that have read my site for 3 or 4 years. And that's been the fun part. In no way do I consider myself a celebrity or famous. And I know that may sound strange, but when I go back to my house, I'm there with my husband and my 4 kids and whatever cow decides it's living on my porch that week. And, you know, living on a ranch is very humbling, unless you're the Ewings, which we aren't. But, you know, it's pretty hard to lose your head when you're out in the middle of nowhere.
One of the neat things about blogging, at least for you, is that it enabled you to publish this cookbook. You were already doing recipes on your website. And I guess when you get 10, 11, 12, 20 million hits a month, publishers sit up and take notice, right?
Yeah, I mean, it really is a different time now. There was a time when, in order to become a published cookbook author, or any author, you really had to kind of go through a certain path, you know, to make the right contacts or to pay your dues in certain ways. But I think blogging has really opened up the real world, the mainstream world, to possibilities. And actually, when I struck my cookbook deal, I had a very small readership, relatively speaking. I had about probably 100,000 hits a month, you know, instead of what I have now. But
that's a lot of books, though.
Well, I mean, really, I think it's about, it is about numbers, but I think it's also about a voice. Mm-hmm. And I love food so much, and I talk about it as if it's a relative of mine. So, you know, I enjoy writing that. I think that comes through.
Did you pitch the idea, or did they come to you because they saw your site?
Well, some agents came to me early on about writing a narrative book. And I got about a chapter into it. This is a whole story in itself. I started writing about how I met my husband in this smoky bar. And about a chapter into it, I thought, I don't want to write this book. You know, who wants to hear this? I would much rather write a cookbook. And the agent I had started working with, no offense, but he was a guy, you know, and here I wanted to write a book about cows and, you know, biscuits and gravy and blackberry cobbler. So he wasn't too into the idea, and I was a very small blogger at the time, so we sort of parted ways amicably. And I just was introduced to my current editor at William Morrow, and she got it from the beginning. We have a great relationship. Yeah. And ironically, where I'm going with this is one day in 07, I woke up with this uncharacteristic case of writer's block. So I whipped out that old chapter of this love story that I had started writing and decided to quit, and I posted it, and I thought to myself, oh, there goes my blog, it's over with. And it turned into an online 42 chapter saga,
which is going to be a book.
Yes.
And a movie.
Yes.
Which we'll talk about. We have to take a break. Reed Drummond is our guest. When we come back, we'll talk about that. We'll also talk about some of the recipes in this book. They sound really good. Coming right back, Charlotte Talks on WFAE.
Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Blumenthal Performing Arts, offering complimentary parking with ticket purchases for select Broadway shows and attractions now through New Year's. Details at blumenthalarts.org/verymerry. Coming up next at 10 o'clock on The Diane Rehm Show, new efforts to revamp police procedures amid charges of racism. Protests continue in several cities around the country over the killings of unarmed African Americans by white police officers. Amid charges of racism, Diane and a panel will look at new efforts to assess and revamp police procedures. That's on The Diane Rehm Show this morning at 10 here on 90.7 WFAE. We'll have more of our conversation with Reed Drummond on Charlotte Talks in just a moment.
All Things Considered is your front row seat behind the headlines. Learn about the day's events and what happened while you were at work. Listen weekday afternoons from 4 to 6:30 to All Things Considered from NPR and WFAE. Find out not only what happened, but why through the in-depth reporting of our news teams in Charlotte and around the world. Listen to All Things Considered from 4 to 6:30 on Charlotte's NPR news source, WFAE.
Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. Our guest today, Reed Drummond. She is the PioneerWoman.com blogger that many of you know. She gets 20 million hits a month, so some of them must live here. She also has a new cookbook out that's a New York Times bestseller called The Pioneer Woman Cooks, Recipes from an Accidental Country Girl. There will also be a book called Black Heels to Track Your Wheels, which is her story, and it has been optioned as a movie to star Reese Witherspoon, I understand. Is that a good? Is that good casting?
Yes. Well, and it's not a sure thing. Reese is interested.
It's never a sure thing.
I know. I'm not sure the movie is a sure thing.
But that's never a sure thing either.
Sony said it was. So,
right.
But yeah, in terms of casting, it's so funny because Ree and Reese, you know, that really wasn't planned.
Right.
But the similarities in terms of our physical appearance, that our similarities stop with our name.
Who should play Marlboro Man?
I have someone in mind, and you would never know who he is. He's a no-name actor, but I honestly can't imagine anyone, you know, Brad Pitt-ish or, you know, anyone with a big name playing him because he's sort of undefinable. I thought he should play himself, but he's a little too shy, I think. So.
How did you learn to cook?
I taught myself. My mother was a good cook. She made very elegant food growing up. Mm-hmm. You know, stuffed peppers and roasted tenderloin, which I do make now. But and then, you know, as I said, I was a vegetarian during my LA days and the takeout queen, and you know, loved all of the ethnic choices of restaurant out there. Then I married this cattle rancher, you know, who thinks the sun rises and sets in a steak. And, you know, it was kind of a rude awakening, just the lack of variety of things that these cowboys will eat. You know, you just can't put something wacky in front of them. And for them, eating really is about refueling and, you know, nourishing their bodies after a long day of work. So there's no messing around.
You know, that's a good thing about being a cowboy. You can pretty much eat whatever you want to eat because you're going to burn it off with all the hard physical work that you do. And part of the problem I think that a lot of people have today is that if they used their recipes that their grandmother and grandparents had, they were designed for a time when people actually did something other than sit at a keyboard and type all day.
Well, that's a good point.
Yeah, so I have an email here from Melissa who says, you should ask her how she still looks so great after four kids and all those sinful recipes.
Do you know what Spanx are?
Yeah, I do.
Well, you're a boy. I didn't know if you'd even know what they were, but I would say that's 90% of it.
I wear them. I'm just kidding. It's a joke.
They do have them for men now, in case you or your male readers are interested. But no, I mean, I definitely put on a little weight writing my cookbook because there was a lot of testing and a lot of leftovers. And I think the last few months of traveling and the things I've done have helped me sort of shave a little bit of it off. But
now here's a recipe for a dish I'd never even heard of. Einies, is that how you say it?
Uh-huh.
Einies prune cake with buttermilk icing. Prune cake with buttermilk icing.
You don't know the magic. This was my great-grandmother, actually,
okay.
And I happened upon this recipe of hers and made it one day, and before I got a chance to tell my husband that it was prune cake, which would have sent him, you know, back out on his horse across the pasture, he dug into it and had a piece. And then he had another piece, and, you know, he'd eaten half the cake, you know, by the end of the day. And I didn't tell him for a long time that it contained prunes, mashed prunes.
You mean he didn't know several hours later?
No.
On the range?
Can we talk about that on the radio? No, but months and months, actually years later, when I actually published the recipe on my website, I confessed to him, and I said, honey, the cake that you love, it's called prune cake, but it's delicious.
I'm curious about Edna Mae's sour cream pancakes, because they sound incredible.
They are delicious, and it's a strange recipe because it's mostly sour cream, and you just put a few spoonfuls of flour.
Can you use low-fat sour cream? Can
sure.
you do that?
Okay. Yeah, you can. And why don't you go ahead and ask me what you asked me during the break. Yeah,
my question during the break is, could you make these sour cream pancakes with a mix? Do you have to make them from scratch?
Well, and I said you can make them from a mix, but you need to omit all the other ingredients.
Except for the sour cream.
And pretty much omit the recipe and just follow the instructions on the box. And then, yes, you can.
You have a lot of recipes on your website, which I take it you add to constantly, but you can only put so many in a book. So how did you select the recipes to go in here?
Oh, that's a great question. You know, when I first started doing my cookbook, I hadn't been blogging as long as I have now. I didn't have the huge repertoire of recipes online that I have now. But what I wanted, and I had no idea if there would be a second cookbook, so I sort of decided to put my classics in there. And the most beloved recipes in my family. So I have my mother's cinnamon rolls, my husband's grandmother's sour cream pancakes that I would like you to try this week sometime.
I will.
And, you know, recipes from his cousin and his mother and the things that I have made since we got married that are proven and that are foolproof.
You know, when you have a title on a book like Pioneer Woman Cooks, Recipes from an Accidental Country Girl, you anticipate that everything in here, in this book, is going to be a good old-fashioned American cuisine. And you came from L.A. where you ate sushi and you loved Thai food and you went out, you had a Chinese takeout and then all this Italian food and Indian food and you name a culture, it's you
right.
can find a restaurant in L.A. to satisfy your craving. And you said that, you know, you can't serve some of this wacky food to a cowboy because they'll just get up from the table and walk away.
They'll call the sheriff.
Right. But there are recipes in here from other parts of the world. Cowboy calzone.
Right. it's a hybrid. Well, there are, you know, the good old-fashioned chicken fried steak, mashed potatoes and gravy
right.
and biscuits. But also in the cookbook are recipes that I love. I have a potato and leek pizza in there.
That actually sounds delicious.
It is so delicious. But it has goat cheese. So, that you know, that's nothing I would ever serve the cowboys. That's a deal breaker right there.
Okay.
And there's creme brulee. So it's not an exhaustive encyclopedia on country cooking. It's more a peek inside of my life and the things that I make. So
you also have little emblems on some of the recipes. Like, for instance, on the cowboy calzone, there is, in the upper left-hand corner of the page, a cowboy on a horse. And I understand that means that those are certified cowboy dishes that your husband has approved.
Right. There's a cowboy icon and a cowgirl icon. So obviously the creme brulee does not have a cowboy icon on it. So, but yeah, that's just a quick little reference. So, you know, if your husband is starving and you want to really make his day, or if you're trying to elicit a marriage proposal from your boyfriend, or if you're trying to get a promotion at work from your male boss, you can just kind of flip through, find one of the cowboy dishes, and
so chicken spaghetti is another example of something that's cowboy approved.
Yes. Did you see City Slickers when the trail cook said the food's brown, hot, and plenty of it? Yeah, that's another little descriptive. But that chicken spaghetti is the only casserole my husband will eat.
Your cookbook is not unlike your blog in that you've included a lot of photographs, some of which, many of which, most of which probably have a lot to do with the food, because there are photographs of, and you take these pictures.
Yes, I took all the pictures.
That's a lot of work. And you take pictures at every stage of putting the recipe together.
Right.
Your camera must be full of food particles.
It is. it is caked with butter and flour and bacon grease on my sensor. And
but you also have pictures in here of cattle and horses and cowboys and your children and just pictures of things, life on the ranch and mud.
Right.
And a picture of something that I've never seen, excuse me, in a cookbook before, a rattlesnake. Not appealing. It's on the page with PW's creamy mashed potatoes.
Yes, it's just an illustration, and it is not a recipe for rattlesnake, I should point out. So,
have you ever cooked one?
No. Checking. I won't go there.
Just checking. But it makes it for an interesting book. It's not just there are a lot of recipes in here. How many recipes in this book?
I think about 68 to 70
okay,
recipes.
So there's a lot of recipes in here.
Not as many as some cookbooks, but I wanted it to be, I describe it as a slice of life cookbook. Mm-hmm.
But it does follow through on the feel and the appeal, it seems to me, of your website.
Well, and that was important to me. You know, I'm not out to portray myself as, you know, the next Julia Child or the next, you know, big expert in cooking. What I have found is a way to make delicious, flavorful food using very accessible ingredients because we have a very tiny grocery store in our small town. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it was important to me that the cookbook retain the feel of my website.
Is this a true story? You just mentioned the tiny grocery store, and you live 25 miles away from the small town in which this tiny grocery store exists. I understand that you go food shopping twice a year.
Well, I do, and that you mentioned the view. It just blew Joy Behar's mind that our nearest Sam's Club or Costco type store was, mm-hmm. you know, an hour and a half, 2 hours away. She just couldn't fathom it. But yes, I mean, I shop at our local grocery store weekly. I get milk and bread and eggs, but a couple times a year.
Well, wait a minute. You live on a ranch. What do you need with eggs and milk at a grocery store?
Well, we're beef cattle, okay. not milk cows. And I want chickens, and I've been campaigning to get chickens, but my husband insists that ranchers don't have chickens.
Mm-hmm.
So, but we are still in negotiations.
You have to draw the line somewhere.
I really want to.
So you do go to like a Costco, Sam's Club thing twice a year and just stock up on staples that won't that will keep. Is that right?
Oh yeah. I mean, it just everything from toilet paper to big cans of diced tomatoes and all the things that I can freeze mm-hmm. or that will keep in the pantry, because you know if you're in the middle of a recipe and you don't have something, there's no neighbor. You know, you can't go next door and you know, grab a can of
yeah.
Exactly. So I'm really stocked up. And that was one of the biggest transitions for me was just the bulk buying and being prepared and, you know, having what you need out there in case you have a flat tire.
Right. How healthy are these recipes? I mean, do you have to be out on the range working cattle to not blow up to a size 37 or whatever the heck women's sizes are, or my waist, for instance? Would I be a 45 by the time I finish this book?
Well, you know, for me, I don't work as hard as my husband does physically. And
you're in great shape.
Oh.
Yes. Spanks aside.
It's the Spanx.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. But so for me, it's about moderation, you know, and I think our portions in America now are so enormous when you go to the chain restaurants. I mean, you get this platter of food instead of a plate. I have these old jadeite dishes from the 50s, and a dinner plate is, you know, 7 inches in diameter. And, you know, you buy a dinner plate now at Pottery Barn, and it's 10 or 11 inches. So for me, it's sort of portion control, and the recipes are not sanctioned by the American Heart Association.
You talk a lot on your blog about working the cows, working the calves. I don't know what that means. What does it mean to work the calf?
There was a time when I didn't know either. Working cattle just refers to rounding up a herd of cattle, a pasture of cattle, putting them in a pen, and then doing what you need to do to them. And it usually
And what is that? Brand them?
Well, yes, it depends. It can involve branding, ear tagging, giving, you know, injections, and castrating.
Yes. Yes, I was trying to figure out a way to bring that up.
Did you just cross your legs?
Because these would be called prairie oysters, right? Is that what they're called?
We call them mountain oysters.
Mountain oysters.
Which is strange because we live on a prairie.
Exactly. Well, I'm just curious about that because there's a photograph of them on somebody's cowboy hat. and you allude... there are photographs on the website of maybe in the book, of feeding them to a dog.
Oh, you must have read my blog in the last
week.
Yes,
I did. I'm just curious about all this.
It's very bizarre, and I am not. I make no sense. I mean, I flat ironed my hair and wore lipstick today, and then I put calf nuts on my website. So
now that's something you can't say on NPR.
Oh,
that's you just did it.
I get beeped? I see. It's just so it just rolls off the tongue. I don't even notice
of course,
it anymore. I'm sorry.
Of course it does. You talk about using shortcuts in your book, like refrigerated cookie dough and canned Kraft cheese, and that's something you rarely find in cookbooks. So you made fun of me of wanting to make your pancakes out of a mix with cream with sour cream. Does it hurt your credibility or does it strengthen your credibility? And I only have 30 seconds left here.
Oh, gosh. I mean, I just encourage people to use what they have available to them. And it was a long time before my little grocery store carried good Parmesan cheese. So I'm not going to not make lasagna because I don't have Parmigiano Reggiano. So it's not about credibility. It's about we want to eat.
The Real Pioneer Woman. ThePioneerWoman.com is the name of the blog site. The Pioneer Woman Cooks is the name of the book, which you'll be signing at 6 o'clock at Joseph Beth tonight. And look for Black Heels to Tractor Wheels, which is the story of her life in book form and possibly in movie form down the road. Thanks, Reed Rumman, for joining us. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Charlotte Talks with Mike Collins.